Welcome in to the newest edition of the Justin Town Sports Podcast. I am your owner and host, Justin Jackson. And this week, it'll be a basketball show. We'll be discussing the NBA Conference Finals, along with some historic stuff happening in the NBA, along with the WNBA returning in opening weekend. Now, of course, you can follow the social media handle at JTime Sports. I repeat, at JTime Sports. Follow your breaking news, updates, and coverage. And, of course, as always, don't forget to sit back and get ready to learn something.
JTS. Yeah. Just in time sports.
Life is good.
Look. This is Justin Town Sports. Come and get your weekly takes. His opinion from the heart. He can never show you fake. If you winning or you losing, he gon' tell it to you straight. How we talking basketball without a Jordan Brown debate? If you got the hottest takes, you better come and make your case. If you win a couple games, he might even show you grace. JTS on every platform. We growing adaptation. Numbers going off the charts. We create the separation. Louisiana till I die. It's where I'm from. I can't replace it. So people minds are obtuse, but I like to be adjacent. Giving my opinion like I'm Nick Wright or I'm Jason. ESPN, better watch out, cause I'm coming for the spaceship. We even tweeting on Twitter, you can meet us in the spaces. Highlight clips of sports news, yeah, you gotta embrace it. We never had it easy, we just came from the pavement. I might be controversial, but I like to make my statements. This is just a time sports, come and get your weekly takes. His opinion from the heart, he can never show you fake.
He can never show you fake.
Look, if you winning or you losing, he gon' tell it to you straight.
He gon' tell it to you, he gon' tell it to you, he gon' tell it.
This is Justin Time Sports, come and get your weekly takes.
Come and get it,
he gon' tell it to you straight, to you straight.
Welcome into the show. This is going to be a rather quick or a more quick show. Of course, we're going to do purely basketball today. Not a whole lot of football going on. No need for you guys to really keep all super informed about that. But if there is any major football stuff coming on or coming out, whenever, as this show continues, we will definitely get on that and be reacting to it live. Recording this a little right before we record the JTS After Dark episodes, literally right before. So I'm going to go from this pod, the audio pod, right into the JTS After Dark episode that you can find on the IMS Productions YouTube situation, which will be, of course, put in the link tree for you guys to be able to easily access that as well. But our conference finals in the NBA have been set. I'm recording this on Monday night. You'll hear this Tuesday morning. Excuse me if I sound a little weird. I'm a tad bit nasally, feeling a tad bit under the weather, but entering the conference finals, I definitely want to put a show out for you guys. I was going to do it last night to come out this morning, but I fell asleep. That cool hit me kind of hard. And so I am doing it tonight to put out tomorrow morning so you guys will have it before the conference finals. Anyway, enough of the behind-the-scenes stuff. We have the 3-seed Knicks against the 4-seed Pacers, and we have the 1-seed Oklahoma City versus the 6-seed Timberwolves. Now, it's kind of debating how I want to attack this show. If I wanted to go breakdown analysis and then go back to how this is historic, or do history first and then get into the fun stuff. Let's go to the fun stuff first. So, in the East, we have the Knicks versus the Pacers. Welcome back to 1990s. And it's kind of dope. It's a dope moment all around because Kevin Harlan's on the call, who's a known Knicks person. And then Reggie Miller is on the call for TNT. It's TNT's last playoff series in the modern era. And Reggie Miller will be able to do Knicks and Pacers. That's about as storybook as you can get it. A rivalry that made Reggie Miller famous. The Knicks versus the Hicks. A rivalry that big city versus small town. I mean, the Indiana Pacers and the Knicks were like the NBA fans rivalry of the 90s. So the world was Magic versus Bird in the 80s. Unless you were a Pistons fan. By the time the 90s hit, Jordan is running the league with the Bulls. And so what became interesting in the second half of the 90s was, especially when Jordan retired, was who's going to take over the East. It became a battle between the Knicks and the Pacers. Hicks versus Knicks. Think Winning Time, Reggie Miller. And that kind of became the rivalry in the NBA. So much so that multiple specials have been made. Beefs were made. Spike Lee refers to Indiana as the place of the clan, the birthplace of the Klansmen. Like, it is a pure basketball fan rivalry. Knicks and Pacers. It was almost like the NBA's darling Knicks and the team nobody wants to win, the Pacers. And now they're squaring out again for the chance of the finals. Honestly, it's very similar to the 90s. There's no kingpin in the East. And we'll get to that in a second. This series, both teams took advantage of situations of injuries. Neither one of these teams were paid to be picked. When the brackets come out, it was supposed to be 1 and 2 seeds in the East, Boston and Cleveland. Neither one made it. Cleveland suffered a bevy of injuries. At one point, they didn't have 3 of their 5 starters in a game. Donovan Mitchell was on one leg for a vast majority of the playoffs, and it caught up with Cleveland ultimately. But give credit to the Indiana Pacers. The Pacers, over the last 40-some-odd games of the season, were a 60-win team, pace-wise. The problem with the Pacers was they started off either right at or right below 500 for like the first 28-30 games of the season. They were like 14-16 at one point. And then they rip off like a 56-60 win pace the rest of the season and play just as well, if not better, than your Boston's, your Cleveland's, your New York's. They just started off so bad, people kind of forgot about them. And they're the Pacers. They don't get a lot of national love. Their best player is Tyrese Haliburton, the guy with the funky shot who didn't play in the Olympics. Like, they don't, you know, Rick Carlisle was the guy who presided over the team that got rid of Luka and Porzingis and Brunson. One of which who's seen the title, one of which who's seen Clutch Player of the Year, and one of which who's seen the finals. So, you know, it's a situation where Carlisle is getting my national respect. They got rid of Buddy Hield for Siakam. Like, you know, the Pacers don't get a lot of national love, right? That's the downside of being in Indianapolis, Indiana. The Knicks, however, or the Pacers, rather, they were a really good basketball team over the second half of the year. This team, pretty much the exact roster, was in the conference finals last season. So this team is used to being together. They're used to playing playoff basketball. They understand how it works. Tyrese Haliburton is one of the more clutch players in the NBA, especially in big moments in the playoffs. And they have earned the right to be here. Yes, would Cleveland have given them a better fight or maybe even taken them out had they been healthy? Sure. But they weren't. Ask the Warriors how health decides playoffs. The Warriors dynasty is built on the fact that they didn't play a starting point guard in the 2015 playoffs. And in 2016, they had a Draymond Green suspension, and they had Kevin Durant, and so on and so forth. But the Warriors dynasty began on the cornerstone of players being injured. The NBA has an 82-game season with a more than likely 18-20-game playoff run. If you're lucky, you can go 24-25 games. If you're unlucky, you can play 100 games in a season. So a war of attrition is half the war. And speaking of war of attrition, the Knicks. So the Knicks, I think, were going to beat the Boston Celtics anyway. I truly believe that. I believe the series goes Knicks in 6 regardless kind of thing. But it was greatly boosted by the unfortunate Achilles tear of Jason Tatum. Now, in the game Jason Tatum tore his Achilles, the game was over. The Knicks were up like 13 points or something like that with 3 minutes left. Boston was not going to win that game anyway. But then in game 5, Boston blows the Knicks out. So I don't think Tatum was going to blow them out less. You know what I'm saying? Like, I don't think Tatum's going to be around the Knicks won. And then in game 6, the Knicks played with a controlled fury, controlled fire, a sense of we have to win this game because we cannot go back to that building for game 7. Things happen. That, as far as many, as a lot of NBA players say, that damn leprechaun. Like, things happen in that building. So, because of which, they play with an aggressiveness and a level of urgency that I think Boston couldn't have matched even with Tatum. And therefore, the Knicks were always going to win in 6. So that sets with the East. Again, Knicks Pacers bring back the 1990s. You're going to have Spike Lee courtside. You're going to have Reggie Miller on the call. You're going to have the team from French Lick. Not quite, but it feels that way. The Hicks from French Lick. The Indiana Pacers. And then the Big City Slickers, who most franchises around the NBA laugh at the fact that the NBA media has loved the Knicks and they don't ever win anything. And then out west, we have the expected one seed Oklahoma City Thunder and the shockers of Timberwolves, the sixth seed. You know, the T-Wolves have beaten LeBron James, Luka, and the Lakers. They have also beaten Jimmy Butler and the Warriors. And I say Jimmy Butler and the Warriors because Steph Curry, similar to what the Pacers got with Andrew Luck to the Cavs, the Timberwolves played the Warriors without Steph Curry the last three games of the series. Now, will the Timberwolves have won anyway? Possibly. But Steph Curry was giving them fits. He was blowing their defensive assignments apart. And even games that were close, you know, late without Steph. Just imagine that Steph on the floor, those games go differently just from spacing purposes. And that best player has to guard Steph instead of getting Jimmy. And it just kind of trickles all the way down. But kudos to the Timberwolves. They played their game. They played an aggressive, vertical game. They played a very physical game. And so kudos to them for constantly battling at any and all times. Especially with these legends, you know. Ant has now knocked off Kevin Durant. He's now knocked off Devin Booker. He's knocked off LeBron and Luka and Steph and Jimmy and Dre. So, impressive collection to him. I saw a graphic ESPN made where he's collecting legends like Infinity Stones. Impressive path for him so far. But now he faces his toughest test, and that's the one seed Thunder. They were the one seed for a reason. They're the only top two seed left. So it's like in the NCAA tournament, they track the ones and the twos, how many of the expected players still left. There's one top two seed left. Now in the West, interesting enough, nobody picked Houston. People thought it'd be 1-2, 1-3. Cavs, Celtics, OKC, Lakers for the conference finals. Instead, it was none of those things. Oklahoma City are there as well. They also benefited from injury. Now, would Oklahoma City have won Game 7 anyway? Probably. They came out, again, with that level of desperation that New York had in Game 6. Like, if we keep it close, Jokic is going to beat us. I mean, that's kind of what the mindset was. We have to blow them away because this game is a five-point game with 6 minutes left. Jokic is going to beat us. And Oklahoma City played basketball how I wish more teams in the playoffs did. Excuse me. But it's only beneficial if you were able to have the depth if needed to play this way. And the play, how they played, Jokic was incredibly physical. But we can go 10 deep. So if a guy picks up a couple fouls, the next guy comes in. And then the next guy. And then the next guy. We're going to continue to rotate bodies in. The refs not going to call them all. Jokic probably should have shot 30, 45 free throws. 30, 35 free throws, easy. Whatever his number was, should have doubled it easily. He was getting bumped, pulled, grabbed, slapped over, yanked, like dug under. Like they were doing anything they could to keep him from either getting the ball or getting into position. And it worked. The ref eventually started to let him play, and the Thunder ran the Nuggets off the floor. However, in this series, you enter Michael Porter Jr. With the left shoulder. He was supposed to take 46 weeks. He said, screw that, I'm playing. You get a Jamal Murray sickness, and you get a Aaron Gordon grade 2 hamstring that he played through game 7 with. I don't know how he would have played in game 1 of the next series, just from a physical standpoint. However, he played in game 7. Actually played pretty decent, all things considered. He played great, all things considered. But if you don't know about the hamstring strength, he played pretty decent. It just wasn't his level that he would have been playing with up until that point. But absolutely great series between Oklahoma City and Thunder and the Denver Nuggets. That is my favorite series so far. That is a series I watched every single dribble of because I was glued to the TV. I rearranged schedules to get to Oklahoma City, Denver. That was a hell of a series between the two MVP favorites. Which congrats to Shea. It hasn't been announced yet, but congrats to Shea for winning it. Again, a little bit of suspiciousness that the NFL held the announcement to after those two played. I would have loved for Shea to get it before game 7 and make Jokic watch it and kind of just gauge Jokic's reaction to not being league MVP while being across from the guy who is league MVP. So that is going to be interesting. I think they actually announced it before. I think they're actually going to announce it before one of the Timberwolves games, in which case Ant's going to see it. And although Ant has nothing to do with the MVP race at all, he knows that's the next guy. And so that'll be interesting how if Ant takes it up a notch, trying to get SGA the league's MVP. But I come on here contrite. I come to this podcast today talking about a take I had. I'm a man of my takes. I enjoy my takes. My takes usually are backed up with fact. They're not often feeling. They're not conjecture. They're not innuendo. They're usually based in fact with my personal spin on them. That's the way a take works, a good take from a credible source. People have a history or they have a reason, and then they say their take on what they predict will happen, and they go on from there. And I bring that up because last week on this very podcast, I came in and said, hey, Denver's going to win the title. Based on history, based on how it's worked for all of history after 1979, but if you include the 60s, except for those weird times in the 70s, this is how it works. The best player in the world, two top 10 or three top 25s win the title. That has been the case every single year since 1979 and every single year since 1960, minus the weird 1970s. Boston and Denver both qualified left. Two teams left, Boston and Denver. The minute Tatum blows his Achilles, Boston is qualified. That left Denver. Now, Aaron Gordon pulled up his hamstring. I know that was pretty much it. But what I go to this, because this is going to be a historic finals. It's going to be a historic champion. For the first time, we have so many A, first-time champions. But B, we have so many champions that don't fit the standard mold. For instance, who's the Knicks' best player? It's Jalen Brunson. Okay, is he a top? Is he the best player in the league? No. Is he a top 10 player in the league? Probably not. So that means the best player is in the 11 to 25 range. That means you have to have two other players in that range to qualify. Cat and OG Anunoby don't fit. Okay? They're out of the history. Pacers, the best player is Tyrese Halliburton. Okay, he's in, again, in that 11 to 25 range. That means two other players have to be in that range. Miles Turner and Benedict Mathurin don't fit in that category. Great. Oklahoma City Thunder, Shea is going to be the MVP. You can argue he's the best player. Okay, you're wrong. It's Jokic, but you can make the argument. Cool. Who is his second best player? It's either J-Dub or Chet. I wouldn't say either one of those guys are top 25. Well, J-Dub might be. Neither are top 10. J-Dub might be top 25. Chet is not. So that rules them out of the historic thing. And then Minnesota, again, it's probably top 10. It's top 10. But then nobody else on the team is Julius Randle and Rudy Gobert. So for the first time since the weird 70s, we're going to have a champion that does not fit the historic mold that we've established since 1970. For instance, I will go through the list of champions since the 1970s. Remember, this is effectively called like the lost years in the NBA. This is where the phrase the traveling cocaine circus and the league became too hood and like all of this started in the 70s. The Lakers with the finals MVP being Willis Reed. Willis Reed is most notably known for being a Knick. The Knicks win with Willis Reed being the player. And this 1970s Lakers. Not a great team. Now, 1971 has Lew Alcindor. Lew Alcindor became Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. He has a case for being the best player in the league. The next year, the Lakers win again. I'm sorry, the Lakers win their first title with Wilt Chamberlain. They actually show this in Winning Time. Jerry finally wins, and Jerry West finally wins, and it's like he's just lost. Like, he lost nine times. He even got the final MVP in 69. He lost nine times, a lot of it to Boston. I mean, he finally wins in 72. He's an older man. He just, like, doesn't care. The Knicks win again in 1973, again with Willis Reed being the MVP. Boston wins their 12th title with John Havlicek. Golden State wins their first with Rick Barry. Boston wins again with JoJo White. Portland wins with Bill Walton. Outside case at Bucking history, Bill Walton might have been the best player on the planet when he won that title. He was a sixth man, I believe. Washington Bullets win with Wes Unseld. The Seattle Supersonics win with Dennis Johnson. And then the 1980s start with Magic Johnson winning. And then we get to modern history. Okay. I say that because that is an area of history that no one cares about. Not a singular soul. No one cares that Lou Alcindor won. Okay, people care about that title. You almost got to tell Knicks fans they won in the 70s. No one cares. It is the lost time in NBA history. That time is so forgotten about. That's when the finals were on tape delay. That's when, like, the game would happen on Tuesday. You would read the box score in the papers Wednesday morning, know who won, and then the game would come on tonight on TV. If you're lucky, it might be two nights. If they had, like, you know, Elvis special was on or something, you know what I'm saying? Like, it was a traveling cocaine circus. The finals on tape delay. It was the era of history no one cares about. People, like, blanked it out of their memories. It doesn't exist for the vast majority of people. Well, NBA, you have a ratings problem. You're not going to have your seventh different champion in 7 years. For the first time in history, even those weird 70s had a couple repeats. The Knicks won and the Lakers won twice. You have a ratings problem. People care about dynasties. Do I think you should rig the league for people to win? No. Do I think parity is good in the NBA? Hell no. I think dynastic teams are. The ratings were its highest of recent when LeBron was in the finals every year playing the Warriors. And everybody knew in August it's going to be LeBron versus the Warriors. And in June, everybody tuned in to watch LeBron versus the Warriors. And you knew it in August. So now you have a nightmare scenario staring you in the face if you're in the NBA. The Pacers can very well beat the Knicks. OKC can very well beat the Timberwolves. So you're going to tell me the Indianapolis team and the Oklahoma City team could be the NBA Finals? Both of them are in the Midwest. Oklahoma City's in Oklahoma. Straight up from that to Indiana. Like, this is like the Mississippi River series. Like, this could be a disaster for the NBA ratings-wise. Minnesota is like your big city left in the West. And, of course, the saving grace for the NBA is the Knicks make it. The Knicks make it, then all bets are off. It doesn't matter who gets in, Oklahoma City or Timberwolves, because the national media will run up and down New York for the sole purpose of, you know, it's New York. So they're going to run up and down to get as many people to watch as possible, because again, it's New York. So New York's saving grace. But this is an interesting spot for the NBA. You preach parity, but you want multiple big cities to win. You don't want little cities running around everywhere. The only thing worse for the NBA would be like if New Orleans won. And honestly, New Orleans is a better city than Oklahoma City. Just going to be honest. So you're staring at a nightmare scenario ratings wise if you are the NBA, potentially with, say, Indianapolis and Oklahoma City being your NBA final cities. That'd be like the NBA. That'd be like the NFL sticking a Super Bowl in like Green Bay. Historic, sure, but let's not be crazy here. Or sticking a Super Bowl in, like, if St. Louis still had their team. And it's like, nah, no, there's better financial decisions. That's kind of what this is. There's better financial decisions available to the NBA than Indianapolis and Oklahoma City. That's all I'm saying. That's all I'm saying. I'm not saying conspiracy. I know conspiracy is very popular in the NBA, and I'm about to actually speak on one. But what I am saying is that there's better scenarios for the NBA. And if I were them, I would get back into the dynastic business instead of the parity business. However that may be seen. The ratings were up in the 70s and 80s. Or in the 80s. Who won all the titles in the 80s? Magic and Bird with Sprinkle and Isaiah Thomas. The ratings were through the roof in the 90s. Who won all the titles in the 90s? Jordan. Sprinkle and Hakeem Olajuwon. The ratings dips after Jordan retires. Who won the titles? The Spurs. Small market. No one cared. When did the ratings spike again? Shaq and Kobe. Ratings fall off again. When did they spike again? When Kobe wins again in LA. Ratings fall off again. When did they spike again? When LeBron and Steph began their streaks. It's just the way it is. Dynasties sell in the NBA. Not in football, but in basketball. People at a certain point tune in to watch you or tune in to watch you fail. That's it. It works in boxing. It works in basketball. Again, not so much in football. Parity in the NFL is great. Parity in college football is amazing. You want to keep as many areas of the country involved as possible. It is awful for basketball. The ratings dipped in the in the tournament after UConn lost. People want to see UConn fail. Once they failed, I have no reason to watch. They pick back up again for the Final Four, but still. Oh, and then the draft lottery controversy is continuing to roar. Shaq didn't help. Today, Shaq goes. David Stern pulls him aside when he met him and said, "You want to play in the hot or the cold?" Shaq said the heat, the hot, and Orlando ends up with the first pick. It's been rigged, and I went through it quickly. Shaq to Orlando. Chris Webber to Orlando. Chris traded for Penny Hardaway. LeBron to Cleveland. Mad to the Lakers. I don't think the lottery was installed then, but Patrick Ewing, of course. LeBron to Cleveland. Derrick Rose to Chicago. Anthony Davis and Zion to New Orleans. And the latest being Cooper Flagg to Dallas. It happens. It is what it is. If the NBA is fine with rigging that, they can rig the playoff system. That's all I'm saying. But you think more big cities involved? I say unconference that MFA. They just play 1 through 16 for the playoffs. But you have the balance schedule out. Who cares? But that's, to me, the best way to get more cities involved. Because what if that first round matchup is Oklahoma City, Indiana, and you get it out the way early? You know, I'm just thinking here, spitballing here, because again, the NBA is dangerously, they actually have more parity than the 70s, and they're getting to the point where people care about as much as the 70s. It'll never be tape delayed again, but the apathy for the NBA is growing, and parity is not helping. Neither of these small cities. But up next, we will touch on the WNBA and what's happening there. Welcome back into the show, and welcome back into the WNBA regular season. As it got started just last weekend, actually games going on now. Number one pick, Paige Beckers, is leading her Dallas Wings with her and Arike Ogunbowale's Dallas Wings against the Seattle Storm. Neka Ogumake and crew are in Seattle. I think Skylar Diggins is in Seattle. Yeah. And so they're actually playing right now, but the WNBA opened last week, and they had kind of showcase level games. They had one of the league's best players. Many are trying to crown her the best player, Nafisa Collier, going up against Paige Beckers in her WNBA debut, her regular season WNBA debut rather. You had Atlanta play Connecticut, again, a team with a veteran star, Brittany Griner, Ryan Howard, and that crew versus the Young Bucks in Connecticut, the Kiki Area fans, and so on and so forth. And then, of course, you had the game everybody was tuning in to see, the game that many people around the WNBA community, honestly, is it on Twitter? At least on my Twitter. And in my interactions are kind of getting tired of, and that is Caitlin Clark's Indiana Fever versus Chicago Sky's and the Angel Reese. I think this rivalry would be more of a rivalry if the games were even. So of course, when they came in, what was the first thing everybody said? Oh, it's going to be the W's, Magic versus Bird. That's what saved the NBA. Magic versus Bird. And people were paying it as, oh, it was too raw, you know, two crazy talented players from the college game, and they came in at the same time, and they were the same size, and they went to two historic franchises. Bird went to the Celtics, who by the time he got to the team already won like 13 titles. Magic goes to the Lakers. By the time he got the team, already won 4 or 5 titles. You know, you get, you know, most of the titles are between the two teams, and East Coast, West Coast, and it was crazy. But the further history goes along, the more they tend to kind of paint over or minimize one part of the Bird Magic rivalry that made it what it was. One was black, and one was white. One was, they were both middle mid-American kids. Magic was from East Lansing, Michigan. Larry Bird was the hick from French Lick, Indiana. They were both Midwestern kids. So what kind of helped that is neither, both understood racism, both knew it, neither one lived in it heavily. So, of course, in their childhoods, they came into the draft Bird was a couple years older than Magic. Bird was in his early 20s. Magic was like 19 to 20. Magic was like 19 to 20. When they got to the NBA, both childhood, especially their teenage formative years, had they grown up in the South, would have been during Jim Crow. Jim Crow doesn't get outlawed early 70s, late 60s, somewhere in there. Yeah, like the 60s. So they would have had their early years in Jim Crow. And even when Jim Crow was canceled or was legally outlawed, you didn't have freedom. It wasn't like they snapped their fingers and everything was perfectly kosher. Like, no, the people who didn't like and wanted to, you know, I'm trying to think of the word, but wanted to hold down, oppress black people before, wanted to do it after. People who had a beef with and who disliked white people before, disliked white people after. At no point, with the stroke of a pen in the Supreme Court, did racism disappear, right? It may have been more illegal, but it didn't go away overnight, right? But anyway, so that is what spearheaded Magic versus Bird. Was, I'll be honest, racial tensions, high level racial tensions. And that is what I've tried to avoid. And I really wanted WNBA media outside of myself. I wanted high level people in the WNBA media space to go and try to quell the racial aspect of Kalen versus Angel. So when they went at it in college, and Angel does the "you can't see me" whatever, Angel got that from Kalen, who hit it to an opponent a couple of rounds before. It was almost like turn around and turn about is fair play. Oh, I can't see you, so Kalen, Angel does it back. That became a racial symbol. Kalen walks away, Angel's pointing to the ring finger. But Kalen and Angel have been going at it for years. That is not their first time bumping into each other. Because when Angel was at Maryland, Kalen was at Iowa. So that's not their first time crossing paths with each other. Angel beats her. It gets really racial on Twitter. A lot of Midwestern Caucasian people stepped up and attacked Angel for her actions. Cool. By the time, they were two college players. But that also spikes women's college basketball's ratings overnight. Why? That was a racial component. You bring it to the WNBA, people go, Magic Bird, Magic Bird, Magic Bird. I mean, yeah, Magic Bird, Magic Bird, Magic Bird. Magic Bird is 70% racial in what it was popular for. Middle America, let me be honest, Middle America, racial America had the whites, Hope, and Larry Bird. The hoods, Black America, pop culture had Magic. Both, one was set shot. He did a couple of fancy passes, sure, but he was a set shooter. He was a white guy with a little bitty mustache, kind of Hitler stashy in hindsight, but a little bit of mustache, you know, high shorts. Looked like your everyday white guy that you would pass in the mall, just a little bit taller. And Magic was, he was Magic. He was Showtime. He was flashy. He wore the jewelry. He hung out with the rappers. He hung out with the football players. You know, he was the superstar. He embodied a culture that white America didn't get. Larry Bird embodied a culture that Black America didn't get. I don't think either was intentional. That was just their personalities. And it worked. Kalen and Angel is not that. First of all, Kalen Clark is a better basketball player currently than Angel Reese. Kalen Clark is a better total player right now than Angel Reese. I think Angel's the better defender. I think Angel's the better rebounder. Kalen's a better scorer, passer, shooter. And currently, it looks like leader. And better ball handler. Okay? That's number one. Number two, neither one of these teams are title ready. Neither of them. Chicago is building. Indiana kickstarted their build behind Kalen. But Chicago's building. They're not on the same level. It was 93-58 for a reason. Even despite the incident that happened, and I'll touch on that before I move on. That game was a 13-point game when the incident happened. Like, they're not on the same level team-wise. Because I always think Magic was better than Bird, but Bird's team was a little bit better, so they kind of matched up in finals. I don't think that's the case with these two teams. I think Kalen's a better player, and she has a much better team. But let's get to the incident. Let's get to why this is a mainstream topic. So there's a play, third quarter, late third quarter, if I remember correctly. Third quarter for sure, though. Chicago has the ball. They rotate it down. It ends up in Angel Reese's hands. Somehow Indiana screws up the defensive rotation, and there is literally nobody on Angel Reese's side of the paint. Like, not, like, close to her. There's not a fever player over there. So Caitlin Clark's standing at the foul line, kind of watching the play. She turns, and Angel is about to do, like, the slowest gather layup because there's nobody over there. Like, she's literally got just not missed the layup. So she's taking her time. She's about to bounce it one time and lay it up, and Caitlin hacks her. She swipes down, goes across, because she, like she said, take foul. Pass, take foul. She swipes down across the wrist, one hand on the wrist, one hand on the back, swipes and kind of gives a push with the left hand. Within seconds, Reese is up and charging. I mean, she's quoted as saying, "You crazy as F. What the F is wrong with you?" Caitlin walks away from the incident, kind of holding her hand out to her home base, like, what? And what people are not noticing, and what I'm, and the announcer, oh, it was the left hand push that got reset, and Caitlin ended up getting a flagrant. To me, it wasn't Angel called it a basketball play. Caitlin said, anybody that's gonna play basketball takes that foul. I think now the modern NBA, you try to block that, you don't try to hack that. Night, that's an easy wrap up, or you wrap them. You may not necessarily, because she kind of hacked and let her hit the floor. And with a little bit of a left hand push. But what people are not noticing, and I haven't seen as much discourse on social media, Caitlin says something to Angel. I don't know what it was, but Angel hits the floor and she's like, if I'm mad at your foul, I'm touching the ground, I'm getting up. If I'm mad at what you say, I have to let you say it first. So she fouls her on her way to the ground. Caitlin is looking at Angel. You can see her mouth moving and her head up and down. She's saying something. Angel hits the floor, gathers herself, and then gets up. So I don't know what was said. I think that was the sticking point. Is that Caitlin said something to Angel that sent her haywire, juxtaposed to the foul sent her haywire. But of course, that just ramps up racial tension on social media. We've got African American people on Caitlin's side, which, I mean, to me, there is no side here. It was a hard foul. There's no real sides here. If I had to pick a side, no, I'm not going to pick a side. There's no sides here. It was a hard foul. Two players got into it. Flagrants and texts were assessed. Move on with your life, right? But of course, the discourse started with RG3 speaking up to my Angels hates Caitlin. There's legitimate hate in her heart, and you can just see it. And Ryan Clark responds to RG3 saying, basically, those people you're pandering to will never accept you. They've showed you time and time again that they'll never accept you. Your skin's not going to get any lighter. So on and so forth. To me, again, there's no sides here. I think it's wrong to claim there's hate on either side, Angel or Caitlin. I think if Caitlin has a beef with Angel, it's you beat me for a title. And if Angel has beef with Caitlin, it is I did as much for the women's game as she did. And she has all the credit, and I don't. It's not a jealousy. It's a jealousy more than a hatred on both. Angel has the ring. Caitlin has the popularity. I think it's a jealousy on both sides. I don't think it's a hatred on either. I do think the rivalry is budding, though. I do think the rivalry is budding, and I think now it's between the players. At first, it was their fan bases. Now, I think the players are getting into it because Caitlin fully saw it was Angel, and Angel fully saw it was Caitlin. And I think that the players now are kind of feeding into it a little bit, juxtaposed to year one, or even in the college game, it was the fans. Now, Angel said some things to where she definitely didn't help. Caitlin has too. Caitlin at first didn't say anything about any of the stuff that was happening to Angel, kind of prompting Angel and Teaspoon and others to speak up on her behalf. She then stepped in the offseason and spoke up. But, you know, it's a lot happening in the W right now. But that is the main storyline. But I don't think they play again for a while. So it's kind of, it will die down for a while. But of course, it will spike back up whenever they play again. But all in all, it was a great opening weekend. It showcased the opportunity that the WNBA has. They are in desperate need, to me, of a new commissioner and a new leadership force. They need people in there that are going to allow a new ownership in there, that are going to think forward-thinking and capitalize on what you have. Magic Bird is unsuccessful at the NBA. If David Stern, it wasn't David Stern at the time, it was Larry O'Brien, I believe, does not capitalize on the fact you have Magic and Bird. Now, Stern's the commissioner by 85. But anyway, doesn't capitalize on the fact you have Magic and Bird. You have your lightning rod. Lightning rods are useless if it only strikes once. And especially if it's only deemed a one-sided situation, it's really useless, because then people only think, oh, Caitlin. Like right now, people think, Angel, hey, Caitlin. And I've seen one tweet, somebody was like, either WNBA, either the league is telling her to do this stuff, or she has a hate in her heart that she needs to get out of. And it's like, it's going to look bad on you at a certain point if you don't capitalize. So that is what I would do from WNBA. I try to figure out a way, rig it or not, to make those two teams really good and to make those two players the face of your league and that rivalry your main point. That's what I would do. Along with emphasizing your other good players, Paige Beckers and Mephisa Collier, and Asia Wilson. People have forgotten about Asia. Her shoe kind of re-sparked her interest. And Sabrina Ionescu, who had one of the greatest women's shoes ever. Like, you have to capitalize on this moment. Your game has never been more popular. Your tickets have never been higher. Your ticket sales have never been higher. Your attendance has never been higher. Your ratings have never been higher. You have to find a way, multiple ways, to make this sustained growth and success. But that is all I have for you today. Jumping right off the audio show into the video show. Hopefully you have the video show sooner rather than later. Getting all this same stuff, but from the, of course, the perspective of Giant T-Mail as well. This is your host, Justin Jackson, signing out.